everybody. This is Matt, and welcome to another episode of Takeout with Ashley Coff RD and Robin O'Brien, discussing better, not perfect nutrition and the new food economy. Who's up for a food awakening? Today we have Laura Moser on the show. Laura is an American author and politician, the founder of the anti-Trump resistant movement Daily Action, and as a candidate for the United States Congress in Texas' 7th Congressional District for the Democratic Party. She contributed to the New York Times, Wall Street Journal, Vogue. Laura earned 24.3% of the votes this month in the primary. So looking forward to what she has to say. I know she's interviewed Ashley before, so Ashley's looking forward to interviewing her this time. Also, confused about better nutrition or want to confirm you know better? Text Better Nutrition, all one word, to 44222 to get the Better Nutrition Guide free from Ashley to your email today. Right, over to you, ladies.
So, Ashley, the last year and a half, we have started to see just remarkable change happening around the country. And it's so inspiring. I think, you know, one of the things that we're seeing that to me is so overdue and something that I am so incredibly grateful for. It's just a record number of women running for Congress. And so our guest today is somebody who has jumped right into that. And I think when we talk about balance of power, a lot of the movements that we're seeing to have that representation at the government level addresses so many of the issues that I know that I care about as a mother, whether we're talking about education or environment or food safety or school safety, to know that we have that representation of these issues at the highest level in our government is something that I think a lot of people are hungry for. And what's so great is a lot of the men are hungry for it too, because they know that a lot of these women are bringing really common sense solutions to a lot of the problems that we've sort of been stuck with for the last several years.
Totally. And for me, I think the really compelling part of it too is not just saying like, so when we look at Congress, and as somebody who has just seen a lot of change in DC, you know, living in DC for the last couple of years. When we look there, it's not, you know, it's about, and I guess I go to that moment of the girl in front of the Michelle Obama portrait. It's really about, you know, seeing people that that we see in our communities. And we've just got such tremendous diversity in our communities. And kids today are growing up with that. And it's going to be so important for them to see that, you know, in their leadership. And, you know, I think about it like when we're looking, you know, the different companies that we work with. I mean, Robin, we just left Expo West. And it was so awesome to be with just such tremendous diversity and diversity of opinions and see that coming together, you know, in those companies. That it gets me really excited to see that part. I think the second piece is, you know, just looking at, you know, from how businesses are operating and knowing that there are different ways to collaborate, resolve conflict, communicate, and men and women are just different at that. And I, you know, as someone who grew up in a family of brothers, it's like, I feel like it's so important to have that, you know, if it was just always all the boys or all the girls, you know, just communication and outcomes just happen so differently. So I'm super excited about seeing this wave and thrilled that we get to meet Laura today.
Well, and one of the things that, you know, personally I've been through in the last 20 years is I lost a lot of faith in the process. And I think that's a dangerous place to be because it can easily lead to apathy. And I'm very thankful for my four children because that wasn't an option. Paralysis was absolutely not an option. So it took it off the table. And as I was kind of trying to reconcile having grown up in this very conservative Southern family in Texas with then a move 18 years ago to Boulder, which is one of the more progressive cities, I found that there were pieces of both sides that I appreciated. And there were also pieces of both sides that I really didn't appreciate. And I got really stuck on the fact that this two-party system that was created however many decades and hundreds of years ago, maybe not the best system for our country going forward. So with that, I'm super, super excited to introduce our guest today. Laura Moser is from Houston, Texas. We actually went to the same high school when we were kids growing up, but her path has taken her into this absolutely uncharted territory, and she is running for Congress and has had a pretty remarkable run at it in the first part of this adventure. So, Laura, thank you so much for making the time today.
Thank you so much for having me. And do you know that I know you too, Ashley? I don't know if you remember this, but I've interviewed you before in my past life as a journalist.
So that's so weird, Laura. Your name was so familiar to me.
Yeah, we have interacted quite a few times, but like many years ago. And it's just funny how on this new path I'm on, I keep intersecting with people I knew in my past life. And Robin, I didn't really know you because you were the cool older cheerleader, but of course I knew who you were. And so it's really fun to all be in the same virtual place again.
Well, so I want to dive in because, I mean, our upbringing, I was never taught political activism, you know, it was not in any way part of even our education at this incredible school that we went to. So I'm really curious how you got to this position where you are today, now in this runoff for this congressional seat. What brought you there? Because to come out of the background that we came out of to now be this leading voice for some of these values that are really pushing our country forward, it's got to have been a fascinating transformation.
Yeah, I mean, I will say I did grow up, my parents were always very active in politics in Texas. And my mom has been a kind of reproductive rights activist my whole life. But I and my husband worked for the Obama administration. And I basically thought that we were in a better place as a country, you know, that by virtue of electing Obama, we were kind of reconciling with our past demons and coming into a brighter America. But then several things happened. I started covering education and then Trump was elected, and both of those things kind of exposed to me how far America has to go and how much inequality there is and how much work there is to do. So after the election of 2015, I just kind of threw myself headfirst into activism. I started this group, Daily Action, and the idea was, you know, with my training as a journalist, I was good at condensing complex issues and that people needed one thing to do a day because it was so overwhelming to be facing, you know, the incoming Trump administration. No one knew what to do. So I thought, well, if I give people one thing a day, maybe we can make a difference in our country, and maybe even more, we can feel better, like that we're doing something. Because so the idea was you make one phone call to Congress a day, and I got 300,000 people to sign up, which was pretty extraordinary given that I'd never really taken the lead on anything like that. And that slowly and then very quickly led me to want to change the people answering the phone. And without a lot of, you know, everything since November 8th, 2016 has been kind of an emotional journey for me. And I just decided to jump in that like, I want to be an example to my kids. I want to be the change. And I threw myself into this race. And now I'm here a year later.
I love it. And I feel like that moment of, you know, that whole notion of do one thing better is, it resonates so much with me, or I call it do one thing better, Daily Action, you know, that notion of just thinking about one thing. I think a lot of us feel overwhelmed that every day we feel like there's something that's changing that we now have to like defend against or deal with, or, you know, all of those pieces. And I think the thing that I'm struggling with the most is I feel like democracy has really been, or the definition of democracy has been really hijacked. You know, this notion of, you know, however we were brought up, you know, whether conservative or not, or politically active or not, I think I felt like it was always understood that there wasn't a one right answer. Like democracy doesn't mean that to me. And so I guess I'm trying to wonder, I'm wondering out loud and asking of you, as you pursue this path and as you enter Congress, I'm optimistic, as you enter Congress, how do we help people move this away from this, you know, this side feeling that this is the right answer and this side feeling like this is the right answer into that space of, you know, I know they say it's like, it's about compromising, but it just, that space of, you know, things just need to get better. And it isn't about, democracy isn't about one right way.
Here is a quick word from our sponsor.
We'd like to thank Nature's Path for sponsoring today's podcast. Nature's Path is a family-owned and operated food company that we are so proud to work with at Takeout with Ashley and Robin. Nature's Path has been leading the conversation around organic and sustainable food systems for more than 30 years, and we are so proud to call them a friend.
Now back to Takeout with Ashley and Robin.
Right. Democracy is about a million acts all the time. You know, it is about constant action and constant participation. And I think, I mean, that's a really hard question. If I knew the answer to that question, I would, you know, patent it. And so, but because especially in this time that we live in, I feel like I grew up with lots of conservative people, as you know, and I'm still close to some of them, and we have very differing political viewpoints. But somehow when I go on the internet, when I go on Facebook, I don't see what they're thinking because I only see the people who agree with me. You know what I mean? And I think that's, I don't know how to change that, but I do think that we're living in an increasingly polarized world, and we're only exposed, you know, you live in Boulder, so everyone you meet is super progressive, but you still have people who have differing viewpoints, and we all need to, I mean, so I don't have the scientific answer, but we all need to kind of get together and exchange ideas. And it's very, I think it's very hard. And I think that the fragmented, like, social media universe we live in contributes a lot to that.
Well, I mean, you've got to have seen that online with some of the attacks that come at you. I know I have in my work around the food industry. And then, you know, what's so interesting is that while my book, when I wrote it 10 years ago, was about food, you know, since then we've tackled monopolistic practices in the pharmaceutical industry. We've introduced congressional hearings. We've tackled legislation. And yet when I bring up something like guns, everybody's like, I thought you were just about food. And I'm like, well, you know, the last decade on this Facebook page have been a lot of conversations about how we can protect the health of children. And I think social media really does change how we treat each other. And one of the things that I continue to reiterate is that I don't want people acting any differently than they would if they were sitting around my kitchen table or in my living room. That's the decency I expect across that page. And we've really stayed on top of that for a good decade, but it's so rare. And I think the vitriol and the fact that people don't feel heard. And I think, again, it ties back to this, the fact we have this broken democracy where people don't feel heard. They feel that if they go to vote, they're not even sure that it's going to be counted, or do they trust that it is being counted? There's so many question marks. And so they are not feeling heard. And I think it is that frustration that then just like starts to leak out all over everything. And
right.
I hope, I'm the same as you. I hope that as we continue to push more people and younger people into the political conversation, we can change that, because we've all now grown up with social media. Our children for sure are completely fluid in a way that I never will be. And I think it's going to change that interaction because we've always had that as part of us, whereas an older generation sort of goes on defense.
Right. Do you find, I mean, my kids are still young. Do you find that your kids, their interactions on social media are healthier than adults, or just more all consuming? I'm just curious as someone who is going to face this pretty soon with my own kids.
I think, you know, I think the thing that I see is they consume media at a record rate. And so, you know, if you think about when we were kids, you walk into your parents' bedroom, they turn off the TV so that you wouldn't see what had happened in the city that night. And yet our kids are being exposed at just record levels to the heartache and the grief every day. And the students that spoke at the walkout today said exactly that. You know, we are consuming this tragedy and grief every single day. We see it every single day. We get these alerts during school, and it does change it. But I do also hope that in that generation, a compassion is being born. We've seen it, you know, for example, in food allergy space, if kids have peanut allergy and they've got a best friend or a classmate with a peanut allergy, they learn how to look after that person and build that compassion at a very young age. And I just, for some reason, somehow that went missing.
Yes. And our president embodies that, how it's missing, you know, on a large scale, just this lack of compassion and talking to people. And I don't know, not to get too political, but yeah, it's a huge problem. And I think we need more. I mean, one of my pitches for myself, running is that I'm like a communicator and I like to talk to people, and I don't, you know, I'm open to talking to people and to exposing myself. And I think we need more people like that in the political arena, even though it's very challenging in lots of ways. We need people who, you know, can have the hard conversation and go there without, you know, without name calling or, you know, all the stuff that happens. My husband calls the internet the public urinal of the universe, and people just, it's really amazing that you've been able to keep your page kind of respectful and clean, because I feel like there's so much stuff that people wouldn't say to your face that happens on the internet. And it's like this communal id of people just spewing whatever they want to get out, whatever frustration, you know. And so that's something that as someone running for office, you face a lot of.
I have a lot of curiosity in that space. And I echo also what you're saying, Laura, because I've observed what Robin has had to go through, you know, with whether it's her email being down or her Facebook, and just the attacks. And I think about I always think about her kids in that space, you know, and we talk very frankly about what it's like for her, you know, the conversations she'll have, or just even, you know, the conversations that she had around the time of her book coming out. And so I'm wondering for you, you've mentioned that your kids are younger. I think one of the things historically, I'm speculating because I haven't had these conversations at length with women who are currently holding office, but my observation has been in the past that if you are a mom of young kids, that, you know, putting yourself into that at a time when, you know, it's not just about you feeling hurt. It's about what their experience can be. And the fact that in order to campaign in this day and age, especially if you're not willing to just take a chunk of big money from, you know, a big chunk of money from one entity, you really have to get out all over and be all over. And so I'm curious about how you're navigating that in a very, like, I'm curious really about the structure of it as well as the conversations you're having at home in terms of, you know, throughout this process.
Well, that's I don't know because my oldest kid is almost 9 and he's kind of out of it. Like if my youngest were 9, she would be more attuned, but he's a little checked out to stuff. You know, someone said, how are you talking to him about Parkland? How are you talking about guns? And I'm like, he is just not, we talk about it, but he's not that interested yet because it hasn't, you know. And there's something Obama said when he was running. It's like, at the end of the day, as long as your kids still love you, just do what you got to do. And that's the thing that matters. So far, I hate to say it, but we haven't had any of these difficult conversations yet because I'm still their mom and they wish that, you know, they like what they call Congress events if there's like video games in the corner of the restaurant, but that's as much as they're kind of tuned into it. But I do, you know, they're a huge part of my motivation for getting into this. And I know that they will be proud of me later and understand, you know, what I have thrown myself into later. I mean, my dad ran for judge when I was in 5th grade. And at the time it was just like a thing that he did. But later on I realized how hard it was and how he put himself out there. And, you know, I used to stand out and hand out his push cards outside of my elementary school. But I hope later, I mean, I hope that, you know, I'm in Congress, that would be the best, but that they understand the time that we're living in and how I tried to respond to it. If that makes
sense. You know, one of the things that I really admire, and I do think there's a different exposure that happens for women that are pushing into this space. And one of the considerations I think a lot of people have is, I don't want to put myself through that. I don't want to put my family through that. I don't want to go through that scrutiny, the vitriol, the name calling. And I'm wondering, for some of the women out there that might be listening, what advice you might have as they make the transition from, hey, I'm doing all this great activism, you know, I believe in this, I've got this whole campaign or a nonprofit or a business or whatever, into this next calling, which is to serve in the government. And I'm wondering, as you were going through that process yourself, you know, weighing all the pros and cons, weighing what you knew would be coming at you in terms of attacks, how you got there?
Yeah, I mean, that's, I'm not sure I got there as slowly as I might have done. You know, I just, for me, as I said, it was just like this emotional response to a moment in history. But for other women running, I do think women take attacks. I can't generalize about the sexes, but it is hard. I take attacks very personally in a way that my husband, say, wouldn't. You know, he's like, oh, they're, you know, whatever, forget them. Or they're just bots or whatever. And, but I would say that you have to have your emotional support network intact, whether that's your parents, a partner, your animals, your children, you know, whoever supports you and loves you and knows why you're doing what you're doing, and assuming you're doing what you're doing for good reasons, just have them intact and say, like, I need a support team and I need a kind of hammock of people to fall back on, because there will be those moments where you think that going into the public eye, you think you know what it entails, you don't. So just get your ducks, your emotional ducks in line before, you know, and we all have those networks. And I think it's really, for me, one of the best things about running for office is you just don't know who's your A team until you do it. You know, there are people who I haven't seen in 20 years who have just been completely rock stars and been there for me all the way. And then there are people who I would consider close to me who are busy, you know, who just aren't really that engaged. But you need to find out who those people who will support you, and don't be afraid to lean on them, because I certainly have needed, you know, my A team.
I always, one of my coaches, like a business coach, had me do this exercise, and I often share it. And it's about forming your cabinet. And it's really interesting when you go through and form a cabinet, you know, instead of thinking about like, who are, you know, your best friends, or who, you know, are these kinds of things, as you think about diversity of support, you know, and what you need. So just as you were saying that, I was thinking about like, oh, that cabinet's got to be so strong.
That's exactly, yeah, that's yeah. Exactly. That's not, that's exactly, I haven't heard that term for this, but that's exactly what I mean. You need your like team.
Yeah.
And you just have to know that they're, you know, going to bat for you, and that they still love you at the end of the day.
So in terms of going to bat for you, this is a question I get often. So first of all, I have to say, I'm just blown away. I'm consistently, Robin is always telling me like, oh, I went to high school with this person, or I did this. And I was like, Texas has raised has bred some of the most powerful, exciting people. And I feel like we don't like, it just is a weird thing to me. Like I feel like through Robin, I'm getting, you know, all of this exposure to these amazing Texans. But you know, one of the questions that I get to that end is, you know, like with Connor Lamb just running and some of these other folks, I get people asking, so if you don't have money to donate, and, but you really love what you're hearing about someone, you know, how do we're talking about some of the challenges of social media. Like, how do we support you if we don't live in Texas 7, we maybe don't know someone that's there, but how can we use social media to support, and I'm using you as an example because you're a candidate right now, but how can we support those that are running in places where we can't directly vote for them? What are you asking for from people, and what do you recommend in that way?
I'm about to sneeze. Excuse me. I keep getting sick. One thing about having little kids and running for office is you get, well, so it's for people like you two who have strong social media networks, like it is helpful. Like Robin, you've done this, like retweeted me and said, like, let's get out to vote. And that cannot be underestimated. But one thing that we have done that's been really, and I think Obama kind of pioneered it, is we've had people phone banking for us from all over the country. There was a snow day in New York and New Jersey a couple months ago, and we had this group of people place 1,500 calls into Texas 7 from, you know, it's super simple. You just open a computer program and start calling people. I did it. I've done it for the last 3 presidential nominees, just from my bed, just calling people in Louisiana or Mississippi and saying, hey, this is happening. And that's a really huge way to support any candidate, because so much of it comes down to contacting voters and connecting with voters and people. It doesn't matter if you're in the district, because if you're like, I'm calling from Boulder because I care about this race in Pennsylvania, people are like, wow, that you must really care about this person. Tell me why tell me who this person is. And I have found that to be, both as a volunteer and now as a candidate, a really effective way to communicate with people. And you just need an internet connection. And also, you know, sharing, you know, videos. Someone said, well, this is in the district, but a woman in the district who has a big social media following posted like a Facebook video about why she was voting for me. And it, I guess it goes through the algorithm and people, it doesn't get hidden. So a lot of people saw it, and it was great. But there are all these grassroots, high-tech grassroots things that we can do to support candidates all over. But I would say remote phone banking is the most powerful.
Here is a quick word from our sponsor.
Hi, it's Ashley. I just wanted to thank Nature's Path for sponsoring the Takeout podcast. We love partnering with them because they're a family-run fiercely independent, sustainably driven, and deliciously healthy organic food company. They believe in leaving the earth better than they found it, and that's something they've been doing for over 30 years. There's so many different products to check out, a whole range of organic breakfast cereals, granolas, and snack bars. I'm a big fan of their superfood bars. There are these really tasty coconut and nut bars that make great snacks for any time of day. I always have one with me so that I have better nutrition on the go.
Now back to Takeout with Ashley and Robin.
You know, the social media thing, it is such a blessing and a curse. And I think that's what we're all navigating. I mean, we're navigating it individually at a personal level. We're navigating it professionally. We're navigating it as parents. And I totally agree. I mean, it creates the ability to amplify and connect in a way that would never have been possible. There's no way I could have done the work that I do without YouTube and Facebook and social media amplifying, and those platforms, the ability to amplify quickly messages. And I think, you know, you did a remarkable job when you were attacked by a committee that everybody thought should be supporting your candidacy. And it reminded me of that statement, you know, kind of any publicity can be good publicity. Although I'm sure when you first were hit by it,
I wouldn't wish it on anyone.
It had to have been incredibly difficult. And I would love it if you could just sort of talk a little bit. I mean, because you guys swung into action so fast.
I still don't know. I still say, you know, if it could happen over. I mean, it's still up there. They're still doing it, right? They haven't backtracked in their distaste for my candidacy, right? And I wouldn't wish it on anyone. But I something that my great friend and supporter and yours, Robin Alyssa Milano, she just said, like, run your race. And I went to an event like the next day and was still very shell-shocked. And I said, I'm just trying to run my race. And this woman had just come from a yoga class. And she said, you know what? My teacher just said, keep your eyes on the mat. Like, just remember why you're doing it. Keep going. Don't get taken off track by this, because it is external to your race. And to the district, and just keep going. And that was really helpful for me. But again, still, it has not been an experience. Someone said, oh, if I make the runoff, Democrats all over the country will try to get the committee to attack them. Like, I would not recommend getting attacked. It's not fun.
It's so, it's so distasteful. I don't know where we became such a bullying society, you know, in that way, especially amongst people that share similar values and would like to see similar things approach. I mean, it's almost like the best thing that you can hope for if you're on the other side, you know, is for the implosion or the competition that could happen.
Oh, totally. They're thrilled. Yeah.
Yeah. It's so frustrating. Go ahead. Sorry.
No, go ahead. No, that's all. I'm just,
agreed. It's all. So I'm going to move it. There are 1,000 more, but I know we're very excited to ask you our rapid fire questions too. And I'm going to kick them off and I'm interested. I'm curious with this first one in particular, because I'm curious if it relates to anything you're experiencing now or if it was actually, you know, experiences that you had earlier. So what is the greatest obstacle that you've overcome?
That I have overcome. Oh my gosh, I hate rapid fire. I'm still in the process of trying to overcome it. Yes. So I'll leave that elliptical for now.
Totally. Got it. Okay. And what is the greatest opportunity you see in this movement? You could define movement in many different ways. We usually define it in more of the better food, better health space.
More women in government. Like, I think no matter what, every day I meet with a new woman who's running for something who would have never considered running before. And I think whatever our background, whatever our beliefs, we are bringing something new to the table. And 19% of women in our Congress is not enough. So let's jack that up to, as Ruth Bader Ginsburg says, you know, how many women should we have on the Supreme Court? And she said 9. Kind of feeling like it's our turn to, you know, have 100 female senators. Let's try it. See how it goes.
So I'm going to pivot here and I would ask you, I'm thinking 19% is insane when you consider that we represent half the population.
Yeah.
And there's, again, there's so much room for movement there on both sides of the aisle. So my question to you then is, who inspires you and why?
So this is not very original, but my daughter really inspires me. I always say, like, I got into this for my son and my daughter, but my daughter is 5 and she just doesn't know that there's only 19% of women. She's like she's the boss of her class. Like, she's in charge. She doesn't know that one day she's going to have to be quieter, you know, and that she's going to have to fall in line. And I don't want her to know, because she's amazing and brilliant. And like, she should be in charge of everything she wants, you know? So she's really my inspiration right now.
That's a great answer. And now here, this is a question that I wanted to ask you at the beginning of the interview that we finally get to at the end. What one message would you send to Congress?
What one message would I send to Congress? Get ready, because we're coming.
Love it. And so then, I mean, I just, you do, you feel it. I mean, today when I attended the walkout that the kids were part of, they were registering the 18-year-olds to vote. They were signing up 17 and 16-year-olds, pre-registering them. And the kids that would take the stage said, you know, we understand that this is broken. We understand that we have been failed and the change is coming. And I mean, it has never been more palpable to me than it was today, with hundreds and hundreds of these kids outside, you know, on the football field protesting. And so it is coming. And I think we are sort of in the last throes of a system that hasn't worked. And some people get really afraid because they don't know what the next step is going to look like. And that fear can lead to a paralysis. But to me, it is just the greatest opportunity to leverage the absolute best and the brightest that our country has to offer to help build smarter systems. And, you know, Ashley and I do so much work in food and health, but the financial system is broken. Our education system needs support. The healthcare system needs fixing. It's across the board. And so while we have Laura on today talking about the work that she's doing and how she's lending her talents and her passion and her mind to this, the invitation is open to absolutely everybody to do what they can where they are with what they have. And in some cases, it may be small, and in some cases, it may be big. But I think what is the most important message right now is to do something. And so our last question is very lighthearted and easy. If you were a food, what would you be?
Oh, man. Kombucha.
Oh, awesome.
I love it. Awesome.
Because then I would save money on it, too. But, you know, it's sweet but vinegary and has an edge and kind of gets you through some tough moments.
I love it.
That's so awesome. And Laura, I wanted to say, it's so funny. You were talking about your daughter, and I don't have kids, but the time I get to spend with my niece and nephew, so they happen to be here today, and my niece and nephew are 11 and 13. And just sort of like in that random moment, I mean, we were doing like a super fun pillow fight before I got on the podcast. And my mom walked in, and it was just like that weird intersection. Somehow the walkouts came out. Now they're on spring break, so they weren't at school today. And it was so cool because, you know, skipping a generation, it's really awesome. My mom and dad were talking to them about like how they have to like finish the work that my parents were talking about how they started it and like what they were doing and, you know, those sorts of things. And I think like, just when you were talking about both the cabinet and Robin, when you were bringing up the kids today, I think there's something amazing too in the grandparents and kids connection today, that it's like being our age, like it's just actually really awesome to watch. So that has me, you know, super enthusiastic about a lot of this too. And when you were talking about your 5-year-old, it's like the same thing with my 11-year-old niece. I was like, I would never tell her that she can't be the boss, because she'd probably like sock me with that pillow and I'd be down on the ground. You know, it's like done. They're ready to take over the world, which is amazing.
And we shouldn't do anything to stop them. Yeah.
No. Yeah. We should encourage them. And, you know, and I think for so much as women, we just also want to help them. We need to, you know, be there to support them and mentor them in those pieces. So it's awesome. I'm thrilled that we're getting to reconnect. And so excited for you.
Yes, I did an article on stevia and I interviewed you.
Yes, totally. All right. I like
anyway,
that.
Long time ago, but I, yeah.
Oh, it's so great. And now I know where, how I can support you. So keep, I will keep my eye out for everything on social media. And when is your next, what's the next step in your process?
May 22nd is our runoff election.
Great. Okay. Exciting.
So, yeah. So we took a few days off. It's our spring break too. And I took a few days off with my kids and husband. And now it's back into the fray.
Mm-hmm. And some kombucha to help you stay healthy.
Always, always.
Awesome.
Laura, okay. Thank you so much. And I mean,
thank
again,
you
for those,
so much, Robin and Ashley.
Great. I mean, those that are listening, get online, you know, especially as we try to increase that number of 19% of women who are representing us. So many of the issues, whether we're talking about schools or food or education or the environment, hit so close to home for so many mothers. And it is so inspiring to see mothers stepping into this role of political candidate. It is enormously intimidating to me, and I cannot imagine the courage and the bravery that is required to make that decision. And I know it is not something that anyone would enter into lightly. So thank you so much, Laura, for all of the courage and all of the strength that it's taken you to be part of this monumental change that we're hoping to accomplish.
Well, fingers crossed. Here's hoping.
Thank you, ladies. Thank you, Laura. Good luck with everything. We need more people like you running for Congress, in government. Keep up the good work, and best wishes from everyone here at Takeout. Right, on to next week. We have Sarah Brockhart on the show. Sarah is a psychotherapist, author, and Shared Secrets podcast host. She works to help men and women harness their internal power and pursue their goals. Right, looking forward to this one as always. So, until next time, I'll see you then.